Bandwidth and hosting for Bagel Tech Photo is provided by UK2.net. Web hosting for everyone. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of Bagel Tech Photo. I'm James Cameron's personal garbage collector, filling in for Kyle Swagger this week. How's everybody's week been? I know how your week's been, Ewan.
Yeah, I mean, you don't really want me to start that, do you? Pick on someone else.
There's not much news, you might as well tell us.
I bent my car up against some bloke on the M40 on Tuesday, and it's knackered, and it's going to be written off, and I haven't got a car anymore.
Nothing that red wine cannot cure.
I've been trying very hard with the red wine, I have to say, this week, and it's only tempered my E and my disease for a short period of time, and I've got a bit of a headache this morning as well now, so that doesn't help. Yeah, I did the big show last night on a bottle and a half of red wine. I don't think anyone knew, which is worrying because that means it's not having any effect on me anymore.
Just tell me when you're going to post it because I want to hear that.
It was all right. It was quite reserved. It was quite a normal show. I didn't do anything outlandish. I didn't take my trousers off or anything. It's just the usual.
That's the problem.
Usual bit. That's what I'm saying. That's the worrying part. I think when it's like hypothermia, isn't it? You know, when you stop shivering, you know you're in trouble. So with alcoholism, when you stop feeling the effects of it and the clinically observed effects disappear, you know you've got a real problem. So,
no, I think you've just building up a tolerance. That's what I think. This is taking
exactly. That's my point. Yeah, the next thing's addiction, I think.
Mm. Well, if you'd have taken your trousers off, there'd been no right to call it Bagel Tech Big, would there? Boom, boom.
Hey, that's Mr. Alex G. Fox. Welcome back.
Have I been somewhere?
He's been to the land of the working.
Oh, God, yeah. I did that. Oh, don't tell anyone.
I want to know what that's like.
Oh, it's like reacquainting myself with an old enemy. But yeah, I did some. I'll do some next week maybe as well.
Good deal, good deal. And of course, we have with us as always, Chris Forsman, Ars Technica from Chicago. How are things in Chicago this 1 hour delayed time for you now? U.S. had its time switch, didn't it?
Yeah, and it's really cold all of a sudden this week. So thankfully, I don't leave the house that often because I'm always podcasting with you fools. But, honest, today I'm feeling a little under the weather, so I'm just going to apologize up front. It's not too good today, but I'm hanging in there.
What'd you catch?
I went to a movie last night and I ate a lot of popcorn and drank a lot of soda. So I think I just overdid it.
You so pussy. I thought you had at least had a virus.
Yeah.
You had some sympathy up until that point. Now you can shut up and get on with it. Jeez.
I'm just saying I don't know what it is, but things are coming outside of me that I don't like.
Oh. That's one of those things.
Take a picture, stick it on Facebook. I'll tell you what, Instagram, that'll give it a nice highlight and sheen, won't it? Yeah.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
It seems good to point. Me that me and Alex are the only ones that actually feel good on this show this week.
No, I mean, I'm healthy.
I did feel good until the show started.
I'm just drunk and hungover.
Exactly. Oh, the week in photography. Shall we get into it? There ain't a whole lot to get into, guys. Why not? Be a little bit stories here and there that we'll pick through, and then we'll get into the questions here in a little bit. First one, let's go over, guys, and open up your document if you haven't already. This is actually one that I did see that looks very interesting with the hidden panorama, camera mode in iOS 5. The reason why I've seen this is because that's my main camera. It's really my only camera, and I just want to talk about something that I actually know first offhand.
I thought you weren't going to pick that story.
How am I not going to pick that story?
Well, it's the only camera you've got. I suppose I should have figured that out, shouldn't I? Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay, well, there's a hidden built-in panoramic mode in iOS 5.
Sure.
That's it. No, I mean, you can get loads of software that does this anyway. It's, that's not an issue. But they've obviously pre-built it in. They're going to release it in some future step.
And maybe.
It probably needs a little bit of adjusting and playing with. And they'll release it as some great big, now we've added panorama, which is actually already there. You just need to turn it on, and I'm not telling you how to.
What are you bloody laughing at, Rankin?
Well, am I the only person that's noticed that there isn't any of these shots where the edges isn't clearly visible and they don't line up very well? That's why it's not available, because it's crap. They haven't finished with it yet.
That's sort of what I meant.
It's beta. That's the problem now. Since you know, God bless his soul, that Jobs has left the earth now and has left Apple months ago. This is what we get. We're going to get the iPhone 5P, as in Panorama, with this crap.
The only thing I can't fault on it is the fact that the little button that says Panorama doesn't look to have any faults with it. That's it. That's all I can say that's
looks
good.
Nice.
Well, possibly they're waiting for other people to prove it works, and then they'll do it.
Well, there's a guy who's taking a picture of a cushion here on the story that I looked at, and there's also another guy who's done a how-to, and he's put the picture of kind of like some leaves and stuff like that, and he's lined these four pictures of leaves up on this on the panorama thing, and it's abhorrent. I mean, there's nothing lines up. It's not panoramic at all. It's four pictures side by side.
Well, just to let you know, looks terrible. I downloaded an app called 360 Panorama the other day.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I can't remember. It may have even been 69 pence, which was, you know, it's a lot of money, I've got to admit, Carl. And I was blown away with it.
Yeah, that works off the accelerometer, doesn't it?
Yeah, I could not believe how good, how quick, and how it even just sort of says, look, this bit you haven't got, press the button.
Have you had a play with, I'm just getting my phone out to try and remember the title. Have you had a play with SynthCam?
Yes, I have. I had a quick play with it. I haven't used it since I downloaded it.
Now, you've got to get yourself in decent light for it to do reasonably well. If you do it in dark environments, it looks pretty crappy. But SynthCam, you can get some extraordinary effects with that. It's really good.
Yeah, I played with that. I think Andy Anarko tweeted out about that a long time ago. And I went straight to it on the Andy knows best sort of thing. And he was right. Mm-hmm. It's really, really good. It does take some... slightly more complicated than some of the others, but then again, you do get a lot more out of it than some of the others. So
I tend to find it's just good light. Once you had good light, worked really well.
Yeah, I sort of tried it indoors, and it really, I was like, not sure. And then I did one outdoors, and I thought, yeah, that works.
I tend to find that the iPhone works pretty well in light, period. Wouldn't you, Chris?
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. All cameras do.
Yeah. I mean, that's out. But I'm just saying, you actually need decent light for the iPhone to actually take a decent picture.
Yeah, I mean,
are you saying SynthCam? Is it? Does it actually do a little bit better job if you're in low light, or do you actually need?
No. It does an awful job if you're in low light. I mean, SynthCam effectively, what happens is you start a video camera effectively rather than a stills camera, and you move it around trying to keep the center part of your image on your subject, and then when you get it back, you get almost like a three-dimensional effect, but as a single print. It gives you a lot more depth, and it gives you a lot more interest around the central subject. I can't describe the effect particularly well, but you just got to have a play with it. And it's 59p-ish kind of thing again. It's just not worth worrying about. Even a tight ass like yourself, Carl.
See where this... Yeah, thank you very much. See where this crap story's left us?
Yeah, exactly. Moving on.
Yes, please. Let's move on. The Nikon, the Coolpix S1200 review came out this week. A nice price, actually, camera, $369. I guess that puts it around, about 500 pounds over there, roughly? Is that about right?
No, I guess the other way, dude. £329.
Oh, 329 pounds. Oh, okay. Good point. Yeah. Hey, I'm trying to make our dollar look a little better than it is right now.
Dude, you're right there with the yen at the minute.
Thank you very much. I haven't looked at the markets today. I should actually be in the land of converting to peso. So, but I haven't done that. Anyways, this is not Bagel Tech Wall Street. Chris, have you seen this camera?
This, you even know what S1200 I'm talking about?
14.1 megapixel. Yeah.
Not this particular one, but Nikon's had a similar camera for a couple of years. You know,
with the 1100, I imagine.
Right. Yeah. Sure. It's clever if that's what you want to do. It doesn't really do much for me personally, but
it sucks. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm not. I mean, I can't honestly say it sucks. I don't really know, but I don't really want a Pico projector built into my camera.
Well, first and foremost, this is no DSL camera or DSLR camera. If anybody's listening, it's a compact camera. It's something that you would use for Christmas pictures, a family camera, maybe this kind of things, vacation camera, 3-inch LCD screen, 5x optical zoom, optical. 4320 by 3240 image, and then the video does, I guess, QuickTime MPEG 4. I'm just reading this, if you can tell, because I haven't really looked at the thing. Alex, you've got this because it's a Nikon.
No, I haven't. Well,
One out there.
I'm not telling you. Not the only good thing about it. It's a reasonable camera, but what they've done here is. Well, I think you may have missed the main point of it. It's a Pico projector, which for those that don't know, including Kyle by the sound of it, it means that you can put your pictures through, you can print them, you can put them on the screen, but it's also got a built-in projector. So you can point it at the wall and you can share your family pictures and you can share your family videos with everybody using this as its own built-in projector. Now, I wouldn't say you probably wanted to use this as your main video system for your house, but I think it's a nice way. I also think it's a nice way for, say, offices and things like that to be able to demonstrate something very quickly.
Mm-hmm. You feel that way, Ewan?
I think what's interesting here is yes, there's a Pico projector with it, and I kind of think that's the sizzle on the sausage, a bit more than if you look at under the hood and see what the camera's actually doing. What?
Mine was in the gutter. Go on.
Now, if you look at the stuff that you've got here with the actual fundamental camera itself, they've done some quite interesting things. In terms of the form factor, there's an awful lot of cameras that are using sensors that are the size of a penny and less in their full, I'm not talking about just the light receptor. I'm talking about the entire sensor itself is no bigger than a penny. And yet they're still sticking them smack in the middle of the body where it's probably the worst place to have it, worst place to hold it, gets covered over, gets damaged very easily. With this camera, they've taken it and said, well, hang on a second, there's no need for it to be there. Yes, we want to make room for the Pico projector, but they've moved it over to the left and high up where normally you would have the flash. So that gives you an awful lot more grip on the camera, a lot more to hold. There's a lot more space in there for the battery and for the compact flash compartments. And then if you go and look at the physical image qualities that you've got here, the 6400 ISO, it isn't that bad. It's okay. If you look at the camera sharpening, it's not the best, but it's all right. And if you look at the vibration reduction that they've put on this thing, the vibration reduction is pretty good. I mean, they've got a significant improvement in image quality from vibration there. I think they've done a lot under the hood as well. As I think it's kind of like, I think actually the inclusion of the Pico projector has been something that they want to put in there to try and sell this thing to the general public. But right. I think actually what it's going to do is they've detracted from the real improvements that they've made in image quality. Because it does take some very nice images.
Because I'll be honest with you, we're sitting here going on about the Pico projector. It's got a Pico projector. I could give a crap about if it has a Pico projector.
Right. Some, we got some will.
Things for AirPlay, but, you know. Go on, Chris. You have something decent to say.
Well, I'm just going to say, I mean, they have other cameras that have those features, you know. I mean, not necessarily the lens placement per se, but I mean, they have other Coolpix models that have the vibration reduction and a high ISO and all that stuff. So, I mean, I think that really the selling point of this particular camera over other Coolpix is the Pico projector, and that either does it for you or it doesn't, I think. I think that's what it boils down to.
But, I mean, if you're looking at variability on choice, you've got a solid camera with solid features at a good level with a nice price. And you know, you can't run that down, if you like. That's you want your camera manufacturers to make decent, solid cameras that you can use at a decent value price. And I think this hits the right price point. It's good on image quality. It's got the Pico projector if that's going to pull you to it. But I think that's a sizzle, not the sausage. I think there's a lot in the sausage as well as.
I would imagine.
Can't stop.
I'd imagine you'd need to plug it in to use your Pico projector for any length of time.
You know nothing about marketing, do you? So you sell the sizzle, not the sausage.
I don't standard need to phrase, think about marketing because I'm not a marketer. But point being, I think having a Pico projector would be really good for annoying people on the train.
Blitz in the chat room has said, is this the SynthCam one you meant? And I've put yeah, and he said, well, actually, it's free. So there you go. It's not even 59p. It's free. Synthcam.
Woohoo, now I can get it.
Go get it, dude.
Knock yourself out.
I want to see it installed in a dozen shots before the end of the show.
That might be hard to do with my bandwidth.
Yeah, true. That's, no video allowed.
So, I mean, we're looking at the camera. We're thinking, yeah, it's all right. If you go for the Pico route, good for you. It's a nice price camera. The ISO's good on it. So, a good let's get it this way. A good holiday camera. Holiday's coming up.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I think the only thing to say, I mean, I like the movement of the lens. I think one of the things that, we kind of get design handcuffed, if you like, by the fact that, we've always had camera lenses appear there on cameras because they physically had to be for the refraction and for the way to pass the film behind and capture the image. That's not the case anymore. Those rules have gone out the door and now the sensor sizes are shrinking. Yeah, hell, move it around. Put it in different places. See where it looks best, where it works best, how it comes out best. Change the form factor, change the holding. I mean, that was the nice thing about the Casio camera the other week, the Trix thing. Was the fact that at least they thought about other ways of holding and orienting the camera, whether it was good or bad. At least someone's doing something with some innovation, which is the key. Don't stand still.
At the end of the day, though, it is a Nikon, and we all know that Alex will buy it. Right, Alex?
Yeah, just throw it on the pile with the others.
Are you saying
Do you like swim in it? You swim in it like Scrooge McDuck? Like
Alex, there's another camera here. Yeah, throw it on the pile, darling.
I'm going to do a mass unboxing one day.
Please do. We'd love to see that. Similar to what Don did with the iPhone 4 a few weeks ago on the Mac show. Sounds good. Let's move on now. One story actually that looks like it was just added in here that actually does look a little interesting to me is that Kodak has sold its image sensor solutions business. Is this a sign of that Kodak is no longer the grand and gold company, shall we say, that it once was?
Well, they're in real trouble, aren't they, at the moment? I mean, they're trying to make money off their patents. They're trying to sell their patents. They're trying to claw every penny that they can in to stay afloat. And I think, to be honest, their back's to the wall now. I can't see that there's anything else for them to do. There's no innovation again. There's nothing coming off them that's of any value.
Go ahead, Chris. I was going to say, is this a sign that, because they were so much in film. Film was their deal. If you had a camera, Kodak film, is it basically because film's dying and Kodak just didn't, they just didn't survive because film, but basically say, celluloid is dead.
Yeah, it's sort of strange because Kodak was also one of the very early researchers and innovators in digital cameras too. I mean, you have to remember, like, I'm thinking back to some of like the very early digital SLRs that were like 2 megapixels and cost like $25,000, and it was like a huge Nikon with this giant Kodak thing attached to it. And I mean, you know, it's not like they weren't there, but I think that they weren't ready for how quickly the film just bottomed out because the film was bringing in so much revenue. And also you're talking the chemistry and paper and all the developing stuff that they sold to Mini Labs. I mean, all that stuff just almost like disappeared overnight. And they've kind of been scrambling ever since, even though, I mean, you know, this image sensor solutions subsidiary or group or whatever within Kodak, you're talking, they make the high end expensive sensors for things like the Leica M9 and S2, a bunch of those, you know, like the Leaf and the Mamiya and all these medium format sensors that they use in these backs. I mean, you're talking like expensive high-end stuff that they've, you know, I'm wondering what else does Kodak have that actually makes money now. That's the thing I'm most curious about.
That's a good point. Alex, I mean, you come from, you started on film. You've obviously have migrated over to digital because it's cheaper now. I mean, what do you see left in store for Kodak? I mean, is it too late for them to, shall we say, reinvent themselves? They've kind of got left behind.
You say I've migrated from film. I haven't. I still
use
both. I still use both. I've used more film in the last month than I've taken digital. That's my problem is getting hold of film.
Kodak's probably got some.
Well, no. Make your own.
That is the problem. Kodak don't have some. I mean, at the moment, and I don't mind giving them a loud shout, but Adorama in Manhattan, send me the film because I can't get it in England. So, funny enough, I lost the sound again. You'll have to carry on. I will get my sound back. It happened 10 minutes ago. So
we can hear you.
Okay. All right, okay. Yeah. It disappears and comes back
again. No, we got you. It's fine.
Sorry about that. So I get my film imported. The first digital cameras I really, really craved after were the Kodaks. I think you had Casio, and Nikon might have brought out the D1, and I don't even know if Canon had brought out anything at the time. And the first DSLRs I really wanted were the Kodak ones. And I think they had two really high-end ones out before anyone else. And as Chris says, they still make the best medium format sensors. So unless they're planning, and they have really, really cut down their film processing. There's a lot of films I cannot get anymore. They have stopped making most of the professional tungsten films.
I think the problem that you've got is you make serious money when you're talking about a business that's consumer-facing, and the trouble that they've got is that they've got an infrastructure that's consumer-facing but with a market that's only business-facing.
Yeah.
And that's where the real problems come in.
Well, yeah, I mean, how often do you ever see anything that says Kodak anymore? You just don't. In the old days, you walked into a camera shop, 50% of everything you saw had the word Kodak on it.
Mm.
Yeah. I sort of hate to say this, too, but a long time ago, I'd stopped using Kodak film and used Fuji almost exclusively.
I have trouble.
Go ahead.
So Fuji, I've had trouble with anything that's bigger than 35mm. Medium format.
Oh, really?
Medium format and large format film, I've had real color trouble with. But there are certain companies I deal with which are predominantly American companies that insist on using Fuji.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny you say that, Chris.
Britain divide.
I guess I should say that I always used Kodak black and white film, but always used Fuji color. I've started out using Kodak, but even medium format, I like the Fuji. But
actually, you just took the words out of my mouth. I remember, and correct me if I'm wrong, this was a long time ago when actually I still was using film when I would, you know, take things for doing for album shots, album covers, and this kind of stuff. I was always hearing at the time that Fuji, this would have been about 99, year 2000.
Oh, yeah.
Fuji was making the best color film that you could find. But if you wanted to go black and white, it better be Kodak. And that there was something actually wrong with how the images was being, I don't know what the process would be, transferred or whatever onto Kodak color film. I mean, was there anything truthful to that? Because that actually
You've got to remember when you talk about film is that what you've got effectively is a piece of celluloid with their secret sauce spread across the front. And that's what's capturing the light. Now, their secret sauce is different from Uncle Ben's secret sauce, is different from Kodak's secret sauce, is different from Kentucky Fried Chicken's secret sauce.
And from you and sizzling sausage.
And they make it the way that they see it, and they make it across the world in different light conditions, they make it in different temperature conditions, and it has different effects on the secret sauce. And you would get some films that would come out that you would say, I know they're going to shoot slightly blue, I know they're going to shoot slightly green, or they'll slightly red, and then you'll get other ones that you come out with and you can't put your finger on. And one of the problems that we had was, with Kodak Kodachrome was, I mean, like I said to you when we did the episode right ages ago, Kodagrone, because you never knew what was coming out of the camera with it. That was the trouble, because it was just so all over the shop. And that's the thing, is that, you know, every manufacturer of film has got their secret sauce, and it changes everything that comes out in different values. There is no consistency.
Yeah,
Go ahead, Alex.
I was going to say that's definitely true with Kodak and their consumer films. I would argue that in
pro films, probably different.
In the pro films, I don't have to filter for Kodak tungsten film. I have to filter for Fuji tungsten film. But saying that, the Fuji is consistent with its filtering. So it's not actually a problem. It's just, it is, I suppose, in a funny way, it's the Nikon Canon thing, but in film. It's exactly the same.
Yeah.
They both do a very good job. You just have to decide who you want to do the really good job with.
Mm.
You know, just out of curiosity, when's the last time you, since Alex said he's still using film, when's the last time you use film? That long ago, huh?
I haven't shot a roll of film. I haven't shot a roll of film professionally. Eight years? 9 years?
That's a long time ago.
I don't even remember the last time I shot a roll of film, period.
I think the last roll of film I shot was I found one in the cupboard, Ilford FP1, and I stuck it in an old Olympus 35mm that I've still got, and I fired it off and shoved it in at the chemist. And the chemist looked at me and said, "What?"
And I a burning question before we move on, Alex. Why are you shooting in film recently? Is it because of the request of the client, or is it because you prefer it?
Well, it's sort of the request of the client, e.g. the client wants something of such a higher finish and resolution that I can't supply that with any digital camera on the market. I mean, you've got to remember, I don't shoot in rolls of film. I shoot in sheets of film. Mm-hmm. I shoot in a piece of film, which is a 5x4 inch or a 10x8 inch. A 10x8 inch of film, I've no idea if there is such a thing as an equivalent, but 10x8 inch of film has got to be 500 megapixel camera, something of that equivalent. Mm-hmm. And it just doesn't exist. And I don't, even the best digital cameras in the world do not have the depth, in my mind, that film, it just does not have that feel that film has. And some people want that film. And also remembering, if you send someone a transparency, which is a positive, it's not, it's as you see it. They can actually hold up this 10x8 inch piece of film and get an almost perfect reproduction of the £10 million painting they're thinking of purchasing. Mm-hmm. And they don't need a screen. They don't need anything. They need a window and a transparency. And a lot of people want that. And I'm very willing to supply it as long as Kodak makes the film.
It's funny you say that though, Alex, because I feel the same thing about music. I still feel vinyl feels warmer. And if you're using the right equipment and if you're playing it on the right kind of thing and you got the right kind of stereo, it still does sound better than CD. Yeah. It still does sound better than...
If someone was going to pay you five times more to produce a vinyl record, you'd happily do that over MP3.
Yeah, especially over MP3.
Exactly.
Good God. shall we move on to our last story, guys? It has something to do with Google Plus seeking innovative photographers. Now, this is
we're not going to talk about the Polaroid?
Oh, I didn't even see about the Polaroid. Do tell. There's a Polaroid and it's a camera.
Z340 Instant.
I didn't see it.
It's
screw Google.
Well, what they've done is they've taken a digital camera and one of those Zinc, the Zero Ink Zinc printer, and like jammed it into something that looks like an old-fashioned Polaroid camera. So it's like a digital version of the old Polaroid analog cameras.
Sweet. It's like Instagram, but Insta now.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. It's Instamatic, which is what the Polaroid used to be. Yeah.
Where is the story at? I do not see it here in the document.
I took that trouble and effort, and you're not even reading the story.
It's underneath the firmware update story.
Beginning to really like this.
Oh, that's why, because I'm reading the... go on, sorry, Chris. Dumb host here. Okay. Please continue.
No. I really want to try one out. I'll be honest. I saw at CES, I saw the Lady Gaga version of this camera. I think they call it the GL20.
But would you buy it with your own money?
They wouldn't let us... Would I buy it with my... I don't know, because I've never gotten to try it. They wouldn't even let us touch it at CES, so...
I would. We all love Polaroid back in 1979. I mean, it's kind of cool. I think we talked about this before actually on the show, haven't we, Ewan? I think it was a few months ago when it was just kind of just we didn't know if it would do anything or good. Now it looks like this is actually, there's a market for this.
Did I do Bah Humbug then or not?
I don't know. You're going to do it now though, I have a feeling.
Well, I mean, this thing's going to cost you £300. $300. So $300 at B&H, and then you've got to buy the paper to go in it, and the paper is going to cost you $20 for 30 sheets of 3x4. Mm-hmm. $20 for 30 sheets of 3x4 camera paper. You're having a laugh.
See, what you're forgetting, Ewan, is it was always that expensive.
Yeah, but you're a bunch of sentimental old... Yeah, but it had chemicals in it that squished out across the paper and did
This has got dye sublimation, so it's still got chemicals in it.
Oh, if it's a dye sub printer, then I'll grant you the price is pretty fantastic for a dye sub printer at that level.
Change his mind.
But I agree. I think a Dyson printer in a package that size, if it pushes out decent prints, is fantastic in terms of the technology. And for all of you sentimental old gits out there, you're going to look back and go, I remember Polaroid, and oh, isn't that sweet? And then you'll buy this thing and you'll be using it as a frigging doorstop in 3 years. You'll never use it. You'll never buy the thing, and there won't be any paper left over. So when you've bought it, you'll have your digital camera, but it'll actually be a fairly expensive digital camera, which doesn't take a great particularly picture. And it's only going to be the lifespan of how long you can buy the paper. And this is going to flop, and you won't be able to buy the paper in another 12 months.
But it's got 14 megapixels.
Yeah, right.
I stand corrected.
Second thing about paper, right? Dysub paper, right? Dysub paper is a standard Dysub paper, so I reckon you could go and buy any old Dysub paper.
No, this isn't. It isn't standard Dysub paper.
Yeah, I'll get it working. Don't you worry.
No, the dyes are actually embedded in the paper, and the printer itself uses heat to activate them.
Yeah, that's what Dysub is, but I don't want to tell you.
Right. The point, forget about what Dysub is or isn't. My point is, you'll buy this, they won't sell any, the paper won't be on sale, and you won't be able to get any eventually. And no one's going to buy it because they're going to figure out very quickly that they're locked into a device on a format that's not going to be functional for them, and they can't use anywhere else afterwards.
Hey, it sounds like WebOS.
It sounds like Polaroid.
I'll tell you what, I remember, I don't even remember when this was, late 90s, Polaroid had these little cameras that were about this big. They're little snapshot cameras, and they had little instant pictures that were about this big, like an inch and a half by an inch. They made little stickers.
Yeah, I remember those. I cannot
for the life of me remember the name, but I still have the camera back in one of my camera bags somewhere. But I loved that camera, and the film was retarded expensive. Yeah, and it was stupid, but it was so much fun. Like, take it to a party and just snap, 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 and hand people little stickers all night.
Yeah. As we would have said in the 80s, man, that was righteously totally tubular, man.
Radical.
I used to get given by the processors, as you know, like, oh, we got one of these, you know, you're a special customer. And they were brilliant, but I never bought a packet of that film, but I seem to remember it was insanely expensive.
Yeah. It was like, I think $15 for 10 pictures, maybe something like that. It was dumb, but it was fun. I mean, and none of my other friends had one, so they were just all really impressed that I gave them these stickers with their picture on it.
But that's one of the things I think this is. It's fun, and that's something that I never think we should underestimate, the quality of having a little bit of fun with a camera.
Yeah.
Well, guys, if you look at Ewan's face, he's not having any fun right now.
Should we do some questions?
Let's do questions, sure.
Bah humbug. We like it. We're buying it, Ewan.
Yeah, you and one other person.
I'm just going to recommend something to maybe cheer you up a little bit. Try taking your trousers off.
I usually pay for that.
You pay to take your own trousers off?
No, I pay for someone else to do it. Don't be silly.
Oh, God. Questions, guys. Questions. Focus. Ewan, don't touch
your
trousers.
You're on the right show for focusing anyway. Mind you, the Polaroid was never very good at it, was it?
From David in London, who's probably just loving that he tuned into this episode. Hey, fellas, I recently found a new unexposed black and white ISO 400 -36 exposure films from when I was doing traditional photography at college. This would have been around 2003-2004, which are now years out of date. I know some people like to use out-of-date films for strange effects that occur or that can occur. Any of you ever tried this out? And if so, any tips, techniques that will work well when using a film like this? How about you, Alex? You want to start with this since you're using film?
Yeah, I mean, out-of-date. I mean, black and white, to be honest. I hope you can hear me because you keep coming.
We're fine.
I keep
beautiful.
Losing. Black and white. I mean, it does go slightly, but it hasn't really got any real problems, not compared to color. So you'd have to really have mistreated a bit of black and white film for it to not work at all. The one thing I would suggest is if you do use it, let the processor know that it's an out-of-date film. And when they process it, they'll process it accordingly. But if you take it to a professional processor and the film hasn't been completely and utterly abused, and black and white, it should. Was it 2003, 2004? I can't see any reason that wouldn't work.
Yeah. You know, if it's been kept in a relatively cool temperature, I mean, not above like 90 degrees. And
it is London.
So that was never
right. Right. Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it's probably fine. Usually people use out-of-date film on color film because then you do get a lot of strange effects because, you know, the different kinds of dyes and the different colors, and they all react to heat and age and temperature, you know, they all react differently. So you do get a lot stranger effects with color film, with black and white. I mean, you know, unless it's been really hot or under a lot of light, it's probably going to look normal, actually.
What do you think, Mr. Polaroid Grinch?
By the time he's taken this to a pro lab and got it developed and stuck on some paper, by the time he's finished, he's probably got enough money to buy a digital camera off eBay. If this is an experiment where you want to put something into to just see what happens, yeah, fine, go for it. But it's going to cost you unless you've got unless you've still got all your stuff. I mean, the chemicals that you've got from 2003, 2004, David, aren't going to work on it anyway. All your fix is going to be gone and that kind of stuff. So sticking it in, I would say I would deliberately perhaps bracket some of the images so that they underexpose just in case any lights got into it and just weakened it a bit. But if it has, I don't think you're really going to save it anyway. But I might underexpose it just on the off chance. But I think maybe what Alex is saying is right there. I don't think there's a possibility you're really frigging disappointed when all you get back is perfectly good black and white prints.
Exactly, yeah.
And it's cost you 50 quid.
Yeah, I'll let me take them and you'll never get perfect black and white prints.
Oh, yeah, true.
Next question, guys, comes from Greg. I almost said Craig. Greg from Boston. It says, hi, guys. Recently started listening to the photo show, having come from the Mac show. Oh, that's great. And you've really got me, my juices flowing over starting up my photography again. But I have no equipment. I'm trying to figure out, hold on, Chris. I'm trying to figure out what I should buy to get back in. I think I'm perhaps ready to part with about $1,500. But would like some accessories with that too. Can you give me an idea of where to start? Chris, you've opened up your mouth first. Go ahead.
Well, I'm just saying Greg's got his juices flowing. Ewan's got his sausage sizzling. I don't know what's going on here.
Ewan, that's the title, just so you know. Don't change it. Sizzling sausage.
$1,500 is a good budget, I think. You know, you can get... If you want to go with new equipment, you could start out with a pretty good entry level DSLR from Nikon or Canon. Would probably be where I'd put my money. I'd probably invest in a 50mm lens because it's usually really cheap and really sharp. Something to start a lens collection with. Maybe an inexpensive flash, and that's a pretty good kit to get started with, I think.
What about you, Ewan? Would you throw in a Polaroid for him?
To be honest, I mean, $1,500 or $1,500 is a fair amount of money, as Chris says. Yeah. I'd probably think if I was him and he was getting back into it and if he was anyway unsure, I would suggest probably that you actually think about going to eBay and spending less than half that. And you'll probably get 10 times and you'll get stuff that's worth, absolutely worth it and worth, you know, good enough to go out and start taking some really decent shots. I mean, like I say, out of the four lenses I use 90% of the time, three of them I got on eBay. So, you know, I don't think you need to go out and buy new stuff. Spend a third to a half of that budget and get a lot more for your bang for your buck.
The lenses I would agree with, but wouldn't you be a little concerned about buying an old camera on eBay?
I mean, the one thing that I've got from eBay in the last 2 years is absolutely no frigging support whatsoever when I've sold or bought things on there. They duck away from it very easily, and they always side with the person who doesn't raise the claim. So if you have something that comes through and it doesn't work, you tell them that it doesn't work, and they just tell you instantly to send it back and get a refund, and you'll lose a few quid in the postage. But you know, it's a buyer's paradise a little bit, I'm afraid. eBay, they've got some real issues, I think, culturally with it. But I would buy a D90 or something like that. You probably get one for $400-$500 tops, if that. And you'll probably get a pocket full of lenses, and you might get a few lights and a flash gun for $1,000.
Cool. Alex, you got anything to add? Remind you, he only has $1,500.
Yeah, I got some old crappy Kinect for that.
Exactly. No, and most of it's unboxed and new.
Most of it's never been opened.
He could get a used F5, right?
You can have whatever you like for that. No, I'll tell you what, I 100% agree with you, and don't go and spend it all on new kit. I'm slightly siding with Kyle. I would go out and buy a new body, possibly a kit, because they more or less throw the lenses in for free when you buy a certain kit. Mm-hmm. And I would then go and buy a decent macro lens and a decent 50mm lens, and I would buy a tripod, even if it's a cheap tripod. And, invest a few dollars in maybe After Effects, or not After Effects, wrong person, Adobe whatever, the small Photoshop thing, whatever that's called, because it's gone out of my head.
Elements,
which now, yeah, I think is available in the App Store, so there's another tie-in. For instance, the Nikon, what was it, the 5100 I recommended, it's a cheap camera, yeah, and everyone I've recommended it to has come back and said they're really, really happy with it. I would say a newer camera, and not because the old camera might have a problem or not, but the newer sensors do, there was a big leap in improvement over the last year. It's not the numbers necessarily that they've improved, but they really have improved the quality over the last year. So I think anything over, if you've got the money, anything over a year old, you may be taking a bit of a step backwards. But I would definitely buy secondhand lenses. I'd definitely buy a tripod. I would buy that Nikon. And incidentally, there's a firmware update for that Nikon D5100 for everyone that I recommended it to. So that's possibly worth looking into, just as an aside. But that's where I would go anyway.
Okie dokie. I'm just happy you agreed with me.
Oh, always.
Makes me feel warm and fuzzy. Last question, guys, for this week comes from Oscar from Salt Lake City. Dear Kyle, you and Alex and Chris, he's got us all covered. I've been a photographer for a number of years now and would say that in some areas I'm pretty good. I take good portraits. I have done some model work and sports, etc., which has always worked out well. My problem has always seemed to come through from landscape photography. And to be honest, I'm not very good, and I'm never satisfied with the result. I understand that the rule of thirds and try and follow it, but there are other key, are there any other key tips or thoughts I should have when framing an image to make the most out of the scenery? Who wants to take this?
I would say all good rules are there to be broken, so watch out for rule of thirds. I'd say make sure you level your horizons and make sure you level water, particularly in Photoshop afterwards, because that's the thing that gives it away. Make sure you look at levels. Don't end with that horrible misty grey that you can sometimes get if you haven't got perfect conditions when you're outdoors. And I would also make sure that if you're taking a landscape, you've got something that cuts through the lines of the landscape. So, for example, if you're taking something from very high up, you'll find that a lot of the trees and the landscape look very flat, and the reason is because none of the trees are breaking through the horizon. So get yourself lower, get the trees breaking through the horizon, and you'll give more dynamism and more depth to your landscapes.
Alex, you anything to add quick? I just noticed we're about to run into Mac.
Yeah, no, the only thing I'd say, and a lot of people do this in landscapes, you've got two choices. You can shoot something and convert it to black and white, and then you can change things with contrast. But a lot of people shoot landscapes, and they don't think that quite often it's green. It's green in the foreground, the midground, and the background. There's not an awful lot else going on, and then they wonder why it looks a bit flat. If you can visualize your picture and try and make your thirds slightly different colors. You know, if you have a line of trees, this time of year is perfect. You've got green grass, brown, ready leaves on the trees, and a bluish or whitish gray sky. You've got three different color tones within the same picture, and that gives the picture impact. Don't necessarily think that the shot that is a pretty shot is going to look that great if it's all the same tonal quality all the way through. I'd try and buildings are very good for breaking up the tonal quality of a picture. It gives you a separate entity, a separate color and definition, and it's a separate point to look at.
And Chris, anything to add?
Not really. I mean, landscape.
You live in
Chicago.
There's not a whole lot of landscaping. We've
got
a lot of cityscape. That's yeah.
No, I feel like a tripod is probably necessary equipment. Like you mentioned, a good level is helpful. And it's really just a matter of just really just working your creative eye, you know, just working at it and looking for interesting things and, you know, just trying different things. You know, even once you got a scene set up, try to take like 10 or 15 different pictures of the same scene, try to find some way to change it and change it up. And then, you know, it's just working that creative eye until you find what you're comfortable with and what really appeals to you. So.
Good advice, sir.
That's
good
my advice.
Yeah. We will give you advice. Send us your questions, bageltechphoto@gmail.com. We will get to as many as we possibly can each and every week. Keep sending them in, though. They do get to pile up, but we will get to them. bageltechphoto@gmail.com. Of course, all of this is possible by fine folks over there at uk2.net. Go over to bageltechnews.com right now. Click on over to the side. You can see uk2.net. And Ewan's going to tell you all more about that because he speaks a little bit quicker than I do.
Yeah, no, it's okay. Basically, if you want to buy anything from them, go to our website, bageltechnews.com, and click on their logo. That'll have a tracking link that will show that we've sent you, so they get very happy the fact that we're pushing people to them. Just click that anyway if you want to. But if you do want to buy something, use the offer code BAGELTECH. You'll get 15% off. And if you want to transfer in a domain, you can use Bagel DNS, which will remove the DNS management charge, and you can use both of those together, and you'll have them as your hosting provider, e-commerce provider, whatever it is. And they really are a fantastic bunch, and they keep us afloat, so you're supporting BAGELTECH in the process, because if they walked away, we're screwed.
Actually, yes. Righteously screwed. UK2.net, we thank them for their support, and we thank you for supporting UK2.net. Sorry, guys, we're rushing a little bit here because we're going to run into the Mac Show here pretty soon, but let's let everybody know where we can get a hold of you. Starting off with Alex, where can we get a hold of you?
Alex G. Fox at Twitter.
Well, that was there simple.
That's as quick as I can do it.
And twitterything.com, let's not forget that.
That's
the... Chris, where can we get a hold of you?
I'm at ArsTechnica.com all the time, so you can read my work there, as well as all of our other great writers. And I am also on Twitter at ForzMac.
Love the tweets, man. Keep them coming. And last, but by certainly by no means at least, Mr. Sizzling Sausage himself. Where can we get a hold of you?
I'm at SizzlingSausage.com.
XXX.
You better buy that right now.
.XXX, yeah, absolutely. No, you can get me at ewanrankin.co.uk for photography work, and you can follow me on Twitter at BagelTechNews or at Ewan Rankin as well.
And if anybody's Sweet. Bothered, you can find me at Kyle Swagger on Twitter or KyleSwagger.com. We will see you next week. Hopefully we won't be rushing too much in the end, and we're looking forward to it as always. Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of Bagel Tech. Photo! Bandwidth and hosting for Bagel Tech Photo is provided by UK2.net. Web hosting for everyone.